This is a podcast from wingsatliberty.com. Check out the wingsatliberty.com website, where you will find more information about issues related to flying birds, learning to train birds, and events offering experiences with flighted birds. This podcast is a free service supported by the folks at organicbirdfood.com, makers of Foundation Formula Pellets, Dynamo Sprout Mixes, and Merry Medley Seed Mixes. That's www.organicbirdfood.com. Please show your support by visiting organicbirdfood.com.
This is Alternate Perspective, a Wings at Liberty podcast where we discuss issues related to free flying birds. I'm Chris Spiro, and today I'm joined by free flyer Janet Jean-Pierre, who flies her birds in the Virgin Islands. All right, I am Chris Spiro, and I'm sitting here today with Janet Jean-Pierre, who's come to Porcupine Ranch here in Moab, Utah, and has brought her blue-throat macaw, Hannah, and has had some days flying with us here, some fun places. And this little interview is basically, we're going to talk about that experience of coming out here and flying the birds and Janet's history that makes her feel comfortable bringing the birds out here and what her take is on flying birds out here and just kind of explore this experience. And we may have some birds come visit, like Buckle just flew by because we're sitting on top of a mountain. Anyway, Janet, why don't you tell us a little bit about Hannah and the time you spent training Hannah and what made you select Hannah to bring out here to fly with us?
Well, Hannah wasn't my first choice. I was going to bring Lyndall, a big scarlet. I wanted to bring her because I knew she would enjoy the big open spaces. She's a big flyer. And she and I needed to work on one-to-one on our relationship, so it would be a perfect time to kill two birds with one stone.
That works, but...
Anyway, but when we priced the cost of bringing the cargo section, it was going to be $1,100 to bring Lyndall as excess baggage. So I could bring a bird under the seat for $150. So I had a bigger under the seat box made out of sheet metal, and I hoped that the blue throat would fit because she also relishes flight. I mean, she and Lyndall are my bigger flyers, and my red front macaw is a lazy flyer.
And you fly your birds in the Virgin Islands, right?
I fly in the Virgin Islands in a lot of winds. So they're used to tough flying conditions that way. They don't have all that much height to deal with, or I could do it, but I never have. I've only flown Hannah right around my house. That's it.
Okay, but so your birds have flown together with other birds. You've got three birds that you're flying right now, macaws, that is, that fly together.
I have three macaws that fly together. Hannah, I call her my little ditzy bird because she doesn't flock very well with the other two. The red front and the scarlet are very bonded, and when they fly wingtip to wingtip, which it's quite interesting to watch them fly because you've got the scarlet, which is a huge bird and more than twice the size of the red front, yet their wing beats are the same. It's really synchronized.
They
Thank
synchronize
you.
When
Thank
they fly. Yes. So that's a fun thing because here. We were flying over by Castle Rock, and Hannah went up with our blue-throat macaws. We've got some nice pictures, nice photos of the birds flying wingtip to wingtip, actually bumping into each other, but she was flocking with our birds very nicely.
She really strongly flocked with the blue-throats. It was amazing to see. It was really good.
And do you think she was? Could you see anything that would give you the idea that she was having fun or seemed stressed? Or
oh no, she had she's a high energy bird, an intense bird, and I was a bit worried about her being a little overwhelmed with everything. But she's very bonded to me and a real baby. But when we were out flying. I think right off this ridge mm-hmm. where we are. Mm-hmm. We got some mm-hmm. little tail waggle.
Yep,
we got some, the first time she flew down here, she was doing some jinking and she's having a good time.
Well,
she's having a blast.
Let's give everybody an idea kind of what we did here. You came with Hannah with a background of flying in a good windy environment. So she's got some good outdoor flying experience already. So she has some skills that she came with. But we didn't just take her out to any place. We selected locations to test her skills and her reactions, because it's not just about her skills, it's also about her mental frame of mind. So we started out by going to a wide open space where you could see the bird for a long distance and be able to travel to go, if you needed to go do search and recovery efforts, you'd be able to travel easily without obstructions. We flew her there. She did very well. No signs of any kind of trouble other than the fact that she stuck to you like glue. So the first day she was a little bit, in my opinion, she looked like she was a little bit stressed still by being out here in someplace strange, but was calming down from the first days that I'd seen her. By the second day, I have a calico macaw just flew over and landed on me. Anyway, the second day, the next place we took her flying, I don't even think that was the second day, was it?
It was the same day.
We went to the overlook, we call a bowl overlook, which is what we call a level 3 location, which has, it's on a kind of a...
That was yesterday.
That was yesterday, right? We went to the...
We flew her first. How many days did we fly her?
I think we flew her two.
2 days.
Yeah, we flew her two.
We just did the little bit in
that...
We did
the ranch road.
The ranch road the first day.
Oh, that's right. We went ranch road, and then we went to Fisher. We flew Fisher.
Did she fly there?
Yeah, she flew at Fisher. She did real nice at Fisher. It was wide open, a little bit of terrain variation, but she didn't do anything that would give us any trouble there.
But she was staying too close.
Fairly close.
I mean, when
yes.
she stays that close, she's not really... She's not comfortable, but she's concerned.
Right. And I could tell that she had good flight skills, but her mental state wasn't ready to do anything beyond that. The second day we flew her at the ranch here first, and she did nicely, did some nice jinking, did some nice, much bigger flights from up here and down at the property by the house. So that was a good indication that she was starting to calm down even more. From there, what did we do? We went to...
the bowl.
Went to the bowl. We went to...
And she dove off. The first time she dove off the bowl, she was the one that was jinking off. That was good.
Nice. Very, very, very fun flights to watch. She was clearly having a good time out there. And was doing a little bit of flying with the other macaws. Because we were flying... what did we fly there? Three macaws? I think we flew three of ours.
We didn't have the calicos.
We left.
We left. And then we went to that hike. We did that hike.
Right. We did the what we call the base camp under Castle Rock, which is a little canyon. We consider this a level 4 location, actually, because if the bird should get up out of the canyon with us in the canyon, you can't see the birds anymore. And it's you lose sight. So in that kind of a situation, you have the birds, you must rely on the skill level of the bird to come back to you much more. There's still search and recovery effort potential. You can go out and do search and recovery efforts, but for the most part, you're relying on the bird to come back to you. And Hannah did fabulous there. Mostly hiked up the canyon with you on your shoulder, a little bit of flying in the canyon, but not much. And once we got up over the canyon, though, up on the ridge,
how high was that? That was several hundred feet.
Yeah, that was, I'd say...
she went up in the air first because of the raven.
The raven. Had a raven encounter. That was quite interesting. She did very well with that. Yeah, you could tell that she's had encounters with other potential predator-type birds in the past. Not that a raven is really a predator for a parrot like that, but nonetheless, it can be perceived that way. So she did not freak out, did not take off and go anyplace. She didn't even look like she was all that stressed by it.
And it was funny, we filmed that, and when we watched the film after, we saw her, she went straight out over the valley. So how far was she? A few hundred yards?
Oh, yeah, she was.
Straight out. She was way out, and this is, how high are we? Were you up? She's like several hundred feet above the valley.
Yeah, she's above us at that point, too, so she's probably...
she's got to be 300 feet.
300 feet easy.
Over the valley. She's never flown that high before. And we hadn't noticed it when we saw it the first time. But when we watch it in the film, there she is wagging her tail as she goes out over the valley and then comes around.
On the way out, yeah.
It was really exciting. And after that, when it was very funny because the Blue Throats have been very interested in her, and she's been sort of being, I don't know, obnoxious with them.
A little standoffish.
She's poking at them. She's walking over and poking them with her beak, and not aggressive, but not
overly
real
friendly.
Friendly. And after that Raven incident, they were like buds. They were just like so tight. And we walked down. When we were walking down, why did they blow up? Must have been another Raven.
I wasn't there. I was at the bottom.
There was another Raven came in, so all the birds, alarm called and took to the air, and we're down in a deep canyon. And they just went down the canyon and went to the truck, flew right back, brought the Scarlet back with them, and then they were up in the air flying together. Three Blue Throats that had never met each other before a few days ago were like so tight. We have pictures of them. They're bumping, and it was just great.
There they go. So at the moment, tell us what you're looking at.
Oh, I am looking over a valley at, I don't know, seven macaws flying off at about, how high are they? They got to be 200 feet over the valley. Just something bothered them. Now they've all, one's come back. It's beautiful here.
It's quite an experience. Here comes four right over the top of us.
I bet you could hear that.
And one lands on my shoulder. It's Gracie. Hi, Gracie. Here's two landing in the trees with us. This is common. They do this. You know, they just, whatever, somebody sounds off an alarm signal and off they go.
Now, the one thing I've noticed here, or haven't noticed, is a lot of raptors. When I first came out here, a year and a half ago, you just bought the place, and everybody was going on and on about raptors and golden eagles, and I'm a raptor magnet. And I haven't seen raptors here. And I would have expected more. We saw, when we drove in, we saw one little Cooper's hawk cruise by, and he's not big enough to bother the macaws. I mean, he would be a threat to the little birds, but the macaws are really too big for him.
Well, what we've also seen is that once we have the macaws out flying, we don't see the Cooper's hawk anymore. He goes and hunts someplace else.
I have much more of a raptor problem than here. I mean, this is like, oh, we've seen ravens, and they've done an alarm call and burst off, but none of the birds were concerned about it, really. I don't know if Buckle was.
Well, Buckle went through a nice little chase up there on the ridge.
It was a long one.
And it went through
a lot of altitude.
And not only that, the raven was
close.
Very clearly following Buckle. There was no question about this. This raven was checking Buckle out. What in the heck is this punk rock colored bird doing out here in my territory? Yeah. But here on the property, you're right. It's my take on it is that I've got way less raptor problems, way less predator problems here than what I do in Washington. I've got owls and goshawks and Cooper's hawks and bald eagles, and I see them on the property all the time. Here, we don't have the same kind of vegetation. The trees aren't the same to where, like, great horned owls aren't going to live in them. Cooper's hawks have a much more difficult time sneaking up with these juniper trees and these little pinyon trees than what they do in a great big forest of fir, big fir.
But even on my island, I mean, I have red-tailed hawks bothering my birds. I mean, that's bizarre.
Right. We have a lot of red tails, but I haven't had too much trouble with them bothering my birds. And I think that's mainly because where we're at, the red tails have a lot of food sources. They don't need to bother my birds.
Well, maybe my birds are starving. And they will be after the hurricane.
Very possibly.
We'll have the peregrines. We'll be there now,
right,
down on the island. And I'm curious to see what it's like.
Yeah, that's going to be interesting to see what you've got when you get back. Janet, while here, had a hurricane hit the island where she lives. So she's had kind of a stressful event in some ways by coming out here because she's had to deal with her family being at home having a hurricane hitting the place while she's out here flying birds having fun. That's the way to go through a hurricane, if you ask me. But anyway, so tell us about your impression of what it's like
as somebody who's brought a bird out here, gone out flying with us, and just tell us a little bit about your impressions of that.
I think that the kind of bird who'd like to fly here, I think you want, what do you want in a bird that would be flying, that had fun here? Like, Hannah's having fun. I mean, she is really having a blast here. If I had brought my African gray, she wouldn't be having fun. I could lose her here. But you want a bird that's confident.
Well, to have fun, the bird has to be comfortable. Now,
I think a macaw is an ideal bird to fly here.
They're great birds for flying anywhere, but they're for as far as flying here goes, they like to cover some ground, and we've got wide open space for them to fly in. So birds that actually like to go out flying and actually fly for the fun of flying, like macaws do, and the conures do, this is a fun place to fly. Now think about training purposes. Now you've seen some of the places that we start out flying.
Oh, I think it's easy to recover. I think it'd be easy to recover a bird here. You've got wide open spaces, and you're going to be able to hear birds for a long distance.
That's an important element.
I have no problems flying here. This is a great place. This is interesting for the birds because we climbed up this. How high? We were several hundred feet over the cliff floor, and we were just sitting on the rock, enjoying the views. And the birds are running around, biting stones and squawking and being birds, and they really enjoyed being up there. They just really enjoyed it. You could just see by the way they were interacting with each other, and Hannah was just so jazzed. I mean, she was just all excited about it. It was fun. They like it. They really like it. And I think that when you're flying birds, that having an adventure with them makes it a big deal. Like when I have a high wind, they'll like to go and fly in the high wind maybe once, and then the second time it's not so fun. But they really like a challenge.
Well, see, that's one of the things I really find valuable about flying here is that we can start out at the, we can select our locations for the challenge level of the bird. Where's the skill level of the bird? And then we can match a location to that skill level. So if a bird has not been flying outside much, we can select a wide open space where we can watch the bird and pursue the bird if need be, and feel reasonably comfortable that this is a good location for teaching this bird the next level of skills that it needs to learn. And when it's mastered that one, then we can, within a few minutes, be at another site that has a little bit more complexity to it, appropriate to the bird's skill level, and we can continue moving right up the ladder until we get to places where the birds are flying, diving down cliffs, flying through canyons, adding complexity that they seem to enjoy and that I enjoy from watching their skill level come up. So this, to me, is an ideal place because I've got that wide variety of locations available to develop those skills in. I think the birds enjoy the process.
I was really surprised when Hannah dove down. That first time she did it at the bowl, she was just jinking away. She was having a blast.
How'd that
first
make you
time.
Feel?
Oh, it was good. It was good. Are we flying birds for the birds or for us? We're doing it for both.
Sure.
I love seeing my birds fly, and I'll tell you, my birds really enjoy flying.
And when you get to see them clearly enjoying what they're doing, like when we're flying them, sometimes they'll fly over the top of us, nice and slow, just kind of do a low flyby over you, but they're not coming down and landing. Why? Because they're going to make another lap. They want to go dive down that cliff again and circle around and come back. And when they do, they don't even always want a peanut. They look at you and they do this little rah thing and cock their head sideways, and they're so, you can just see it in their face that they're proud of themselves, and they want you to feel proud of them. It's really a delightful thing to watch them as they play in this kind of a, this is an amusement park for flighted birds.
Yeah. And it sure is pretty, too.
Right now we're sitting here. We have 1, 2, 3, 4 macaws sitting in a dead snag, dead juniper tree. That's not completely dead. And they're just sitting here in the sun. Got beautiful blue sky everywhere. Got stunning canyons and mesas off in the distance. Looking at Castle Rock and Adobe Mesa right next to us. I've never flown any place like this where you've got the combination of great fun with the birds and stunning stunning visual views. Anyway, any questions for me, or do you have any thoughts that you can think about people that might be curious about what you did here, the elements that might be scary to you at first and that you kind of got comfortable with?
Well, the rafters scared me. I mean, with all that hoopla about how dangerous everything was, that did scare me. That was a year and a half ago, and we didn't see anything, really. And there isn't a whole lot. And it's big open territory. And there's not too many raptors that can take down a big bird. There right. are not that many. And this is wide open, and the birds see it. And all the birds are, and they all are looking, and they're all very good at spotting them.
Oh yeah, they would see anything.
They see everything before we do. When people say, "Oh, you should go out and check for raptors in the area," that's a crock.
You take the birds out and you watch the bird
for raptors. The birds see the raptors. You don't see the raptors. They see little pinpricks in the sky. They're sitting there looking. You look, what the heck do you see? Oh, and it's up 1,000 feet. They see that. We don't see that. You have to watch your birds, and they're pretty good. And it's not that many that'll get your bird.
Right. And the thing also is that by coming out here and flying with us like this, you've been able to fly Hannah here with the assistance of several other birds to help watch for raptors. It's not just Hannah having to do that. You've got some help.
Yeah,
now.
The more I fly birds, the less I like flying a lone bird. I'll tell you that. I've always said I do not like African greys as a free flight bird, and there's a bunch of reasons I don't like them. And I think one of the reasons is they are a big flock bird, and I think that's maybe if we were flying African greys in threes or fours right. or fives.
Right.
We wouldn't be losing them. I mean, I lost two African greys many, many years ago, but they wouldn't be lost. They wouldn't be as unreliable as I perceive them to be.
Right.
And maybe that's, we have to look more at the natural history of the species,
sure.
how they fly.
Well, that's why we've got this little flock of sun conures down there, and we're flying them because we feel that they're the only way we can fly them with any degree of safety is having multiple eyes watching the sky so that they are able to see those predators sneaking up.
And I think with, like, just onto the African greys, when I have an African grey that I fly, and she wants to fly with other birds. She will fly with my macaws, and it's, I think they're more comfortable and more confident, but the macaws are very confident. They're good birds.
Well, these birds have all with the exception of Rowdy. Rowdy was not raised a flyer, and then we have two calicos that were clipped initially, and one of those is here. The other one is still trying to grow feathers back in, but that would be Siren, who has grown her feathers back out, has had the other birds to be
was
mentors.
Siren clipped?
Yes, Siren was
She's
clipped
a good
as a
flyer.
Baby. As a baby.
She's a good flyer.
Now, we continue to keep her flying. We encouraged her to fly even the little bit she could with clipped wings. And she had a fairly, it was sufficient to keep her on the ground, but she could fly across a 30-foot aviary and make it to the other side without hitting the ground.
You can't tell the difference when they're flying.
I'm quite delighted with it. Now, I believe that the reasons for that are that we kept her flighted as a baby, so she never lost that interest. Second, she's got mentors to fly with, so she has come up to their level. If she were all by herself, she may not reach the same level. So the mentors, I think, are really important. And I think also that the other thing is that she never stopped flying as a baby. She did fledge, even though she didn't fledge well. And I think that makes a huge difference. So it was a fun experiment. We're not done with the experiment yet. Rowdy that was given to us at 2 years old, and Rowdy had never been clipped, but Rowdy had only flown indoors. And for a macaw to fly indoors, you're not getting a lot of fly
space.
They
can't fly. They can't fly indoors.
So once we put him in the aviary, our aviary is 3,000 square feet. Rowdy was an eager flyer in there. He was a fairly standoff, don't touch me kind of bird. But as you can tell now, he flies down to us and is quite social, and is, you can't tell him apart from the other ones. So
no,
that's another.
No, those calicos all, when they fly, nobody's. There goes one right by.
Yep. So.
Nobody stands out as handicapped.
Nope. None of these birds I would consider handicapped. And that's a bit
of
a.
But part of that's because they fly great distances and they're fit. And I think a handicapped bird, you clip a bird when they're young, they don't develop muscles. It's hard for them to fly. It's a big effort. It's like you. You know, we really should go out jogging or running or riding a bike or whatever. But you know what? The older you get, the weaker you get, the harder it is. And you just don't.
You just don't. Exactly.
And I think that that's a lot of it. A lot of it is fitness. These birds are going. When they fly, they'll fly how far? A couple miles on a fly?
Distance, if you were to plot their path, oh yeah, easily a couple miles.
Like they'll go out, leave, and fly 2 miles and come back.
Oh, yeah.
And
well, I've seen them fly down to my driveway and back. That would be that'd be a 5 mile loop.
Yeah. So I mean, for most these calicos really fly far. They're bizarre. But for most people, when you're flying a bird, you know, you're going A to B, you're flying 20 feet.
Right.
And that's as far as you can get. 20 feet's nothing.
Yeah.
So these birds are getting a lot of practice and skill development that most, even if you are free-flying a bird outside, especially if it's been clipped, it's just not getting that, the dynamics of a flock. It's very interesting.
The flock adds a lot. Not only that, because what also happens is when you've got a flock, let's put it this way, if you've got a single bird, that bird decides to fly on its own occasionally. If you add three birds and they sound off an alarm signal to go fly, now you're getting three times the flying, the causation of flying, because each one of them can sound off that alarm to say, let's go fly. And they don't always sound off an alarm because there's something spooky. They sometimes sound it off like, let's go.
That's what I was wondering. They'll do an alarm call, and they'll all blast off, and I'm looking, and I'm saying,
there's nothing
here.
Nothing I can see anymore.
There's nothing I can, I think they just did it.
So let's just go for a fly.
I think so.
So that what that does is that increases the amount of fly time that they get, and therefore the physical fitness that they wind up with, because they take off together. And of course they don't have to take off together, but they usually do.
And flying in a flock is really interesting, because it's when Hannah is my ditzy bird. I'd have Chloe and Lindell flying, say, clockwise around me, just up for a fly, zooming around, you know, 100 yards either way. Hannah would also be in the air, and she'd be flying the same circle, except in the opposite direction. Like, she just did not flock. And the first time she flocked with the Scarlet, she was just, oh, wow, this is really fun. Banging, banging, banging into her and crashing, and I swear, intentionally crashing in the air. It's really, and that develops a heck of a lot of skills, to be able to fly close, to bang, to learn, and to have to fly. Poor, you saw that photograph we took was it Hannah had her wings completely around Dreadful,
yes.
And Dreadful was just like 3 inches. Dreadful's back was about 3 inches below Hannah's breast, and Hannah's wings were down. I mean, they were flying like that. I mean, Dreadful.
I will post a couple of those photos.
You got to show that picture.
I'll post a couple of those on the website here, on the same page where the podcasts are at, so people can see that.
Because that's amazing flying. And to have to be able to adapt to the wind and getting banged and not being able to open your wings because Hannah's over there hugging you.
Well, you know, if you're that high up in the air, if you don't flap your wings a couple of times, it's not a huge deal. It's not like you're going to fall out of the air right away.
I know, but still, they got to be... I think that some of the flyers, I don't know, I think some of them are worried about falling.
Not when you're up there. Not like that.
Maybe.
Well, they might be. I doubt
not,
it.
Not these birds.
I don't think these birds not have these the birds. Slightest fear of
not
falling.
These birds. But I know I flew when I was in Saudi Arabia, I'd take my because where we lived was a little like a wadi. It's the same as, it's very similar land here. So it would be all green at the bottom of the dried riverbed, and that's where they farmed, and that's where all the raptors came, because they'd migrate down to where I lived and sit there, which I found out after I lost a bird. So I'd take them out to the desert where there wasn't as likely to be the raptors. And we were up we flew off a sand dune. If you can imagine, it's hundreds of feet tall. I mean, we had one of these great big huge electrical towers, you know, the really mm-hmm. big power towers. Mm-hmm. It was like a speck underneath us. So we're at the edge of the desert where the desert is blowing one way, and there's this cliff of it's a sand dune, if you can believe it. It's hundreds of feet high. And I'd fly Phoebe off of it, and she'd just sort of skirt out and skirt back. She was not comfortable going out over there. But maybe that's because she's a forest dweller.
Yeah, it's very possible.
Or, you know, that's not where African greys are comfortable, where I think macaws are comfortable flying out over the distance, because that's the way they fly. Not that I know much about wild macaws, but they seem to fly over the treetops.
They tend to stay right at treetop level a lot.
Yeah.
I mean, they'll do some flying through the canopy, but for the most part, they fly up just right over the top of it.
So, I mean, when I started flying off of a cliff of sorts, it was about this high with Phoebe, and she would just fly along the edge of the cliff, and then she'd venture out, come back, venture out.
In fact, I would be willing to venture that if you think about macaws flying in the Andes, it's going to be a lot like flying here, because there's going to be large, very tall spaces with a valley between the next tall space, and they're going to fly right across that. This is very natural behavior for them.
So I think that, like, if you were going to be bringing a bird here, you'd probably want to think about, well, no, you could fly Phoebe down here, although I wouldn't, because I don't
like flying greys.
I do fly her where I live, but I just wouldn't be flying her here.
You know your bird, and that's an important element. I mean, if you're going to fly a bird at a new location, you need to have that bird prepared for being in different locations.
Like if I had
some animals, some birds just are tense and uncomfortable by being out in other places, because the owners haven't taken them to a lot of other places.
Like my birds.
So once they get used to it, I mean, my guys fly it at different fairgrounds across the country. Sometimes every weekend they're at a different spot. So they're quite comfortable being in different locations. It doesn't take them very long to get used to that.
And this was the first time Hannah has only flown basically around my house. That's all she's flown. And
so if you were planning,
never been around people.
If you were thinking about doing something like this, then one of the things you would want to be working on was developing the skills of taking your bird to other locations and letting them fly in different locations, getting used to variations.
And that's why you're
locations.
Coming to visit me this winter, and you're going to bring a couple of Hannah's friends, the blue throats that fit under the seat.
We'll work on that.
Yes.
Tell me what you think about the idea of getting together with people like this. Tell me about the experience that way, flying with somebody else as opposed to flying alone. In other words, one of the things I'd like to see develop out of this at some point is some group get-togethers where people are bringing their birds, and we have, we come out here and we fly. Whether we have a contest of some sort or not, it's really not important. The main thing is that we come out here and we socialize with other people that are flying their birds this way.
I think it'd be a lot of fun. Personally, I think it'd be a whole lot of fun. I learn a lot watching the other birds. I always learn more when I'm around other people. The other people think differently, and we say things about how our birds are thinking. We think, oh, they went over there because. Well, how do we know?
Right.
We don't know. That's what we think, but maybe we're wrong. And another person has different ideas.
Well, another person watching it from their perspective, not knowing your bird quite the same way, may read things that you're missing. And it may be that they make comments that aren't exactly accurate, but nonetheless, they make you ponder things from a different perspective, and that's incredibly valuable.
Yes, it's. I think it'd be a lot of fun to have people out as a group to fly. I think it really would. I think they did it in, where was it, in Wyoming or someplace
Colorado.
Like that? Colorado. They had a lot of fun. A small group of people met every year for a long time, and they had a lot of fun. And this is a wonderful place to fly because it is absolutely beautiful to walk and hike in. And if you were to bring someone who was not a bird person like my husband would have come here and had a lot of fun.
Well, that's, yes.
He would have had a blast.
There's a
even going up with us when we flew the birds, he would have had a lot of fun.
Right. Even though he's not here to fly birds per se, just being here and hiking.
I mean, he doesn't touch my birds. He's afraid of my birds.
And not only that will people have fun that maybe aren't necessarily the bird people, you know, the spouses and the kids, that kind of thing, being here can be a lot of fun. But there are tremendous options for outdoor activities in town. There's lots of touring and rafting and bicycles. I mean,
like, this is a tourist
This is a tourist destination. People come here from all over the world, even without parrots.
We met some people from France.
Oh, yes.
Just hiking there. And it's beautiful. It's fun. And I like to do something when I go on a vacation. Like, we went to Romania. We didn't go there to see. We went there to see an eclipse of the sun. So we toured around. We saw Dracula's castle and had fun. You can come. And the same thing with coming here. It wouldn't be fun for me to go to a big open field to fly birds with a group of people.
Surprisingly, it was fun. I've done that. I went to the Colorado Fly Week. They've got a little different focus than what we are trying to set up. You know, they basically went to a big field and said, let's toss the birds up in the air. That was the first concept. Let's just toss them up in the air because they can't go anywhere. The next year, they got a little bit more advanced on having their birds trained beforehand. With a little higher expectations. But nonetheless, it was still a lot of fun to get together with those people because we were all like-minded. And what would happen is we'd all go out, we'd take pictures, and then we'd run back into the building, download the pictures on the laptop, and everybody's standing around oohing and aahing about the great pictures. And that was really a lot of fun. And I can't help but imagine a location like this, the photo opportunity like that, is going to be a lot of fun.
But this is one of the few places you can say go for a hike with your bird.
Oh yeah.
There's not many places you can go for a hike with your bird.
Right.
And it being like where I live in the Caribbean, like perfect bird. I haven't taken my birds anywhere but where I live. One of the reasons is we have really dreadful wires and transformers and really awful things, and I have a silly bird that likes to land on wires. Right. I'm not taking her anywhere where there are wires. Here you can go and there's nobody around, so you don't have problems. You have this really fun hike and you've got your bird sitting there with you, which there's not many places you can do that.
Right. Here comes Gleamy. Hi, Gleam. Circle this.
And sat in her bare little...
Sit in her tree.
Tree. Being a princess.
Enjoying the sun.
Being a princess.
So. All right, well, Janet, Jean-Pierre, thank you for sitting here with me. I appreciate your time, and I'm delighted to have you here with us. I most certainly hope you'll come back and do this again with us.
Oh, I think so. I might bring Richard next time.
Cool.
He will, if I can get somebody to take care of my animals, I think he actually would really enjoy this. He really would. He'd go off on his own, take one of your bikes, and he's a maniac.
Oh, this mesa right across from us up here? That's like 20 miles long, and there's a bike trail that runs all the way down it.
Oh, he'd do it. And back.
And this cliff right behind us, we're going to go up there. In fact, as soon as we finish this interview, we're going to go look at some dinosaur tracks. We're going to go look at some just amazing views of the valleys down here. The cliff right behind the house here is really got a stunning
And you
view.
Have things like, there's rafting here, right?
Yes, oh yes.
Rafting and...
The Colorado River.
Yeah. It's beautiful.
Colorado River for people to go rafting down. There's bike tours. There's Jeep tours. You can rent ATVs. You can rent Jeeps. You can rent bicycles. You can do skydiving here.
No, thank you.
Come on.
No,
Janet.
I can't.
You can do
no, I can't.
Mountain climbing, rock climbing. You can do canyoneering. No. Canyoneering is where they take and you go down the mountain instead of climbing up it. So you'll rig up ropes and you'll slide down the ropes and you'll climb down the mountain, which is a lot easier than trying to climb up the mountain. And we're looking at Castle Rock over here. If you saw Mission Impossible 2, the beginning scenes with Tom Cruise climbing that big rock, that was Castle Rock, and we're looking right at it. So lots to do outdoors, and for those people that actually want to either just come fly birds or watch us fly birds in this environment and see what kind of natural skill levels these parrots can have. And what kind of fun they have as they display those skills, this is a great place to
do it. And you've got a setup now so that if someone brought a non-free flyer, you can work with them in a fairly large aviary.
We've got some 10-by-20-foot aviaries built right here, so we've got that part of it built. We are going to, I haven't quite decided exactly where yet, but I will be building another 100-by-30-foot, another 3,000 square foot aviary here for training purposes as well.
And the other thing is, one of the things I was concerned about when I brought Hannah was that she's the odd person out of the flock. She doesn't know these birds. And because she was in the motorhome for a while, mm-hmm. I guess she learned them and the birds are nice. Your birds are nice to other birds, not like my monsters.
Yeah, well, our birds, the interesting thing about that is that, you know, our birds aren't really exposed to a lot of people, not all of them, my flyers especially. I don't normally ask my flyers to sit on people, and I've never really spent a lot of time teaching them to be social with other people, but yet they are because of the way we handle them.
But they're nice to other birds, so that when if you were taking a naive bird...
Right.
The other bird is not going to be... Hannah was never afraid of your birds, ever. She's the one who's sort of pushing them around and being silly around them. But your birds are very nice to other birds, so that when someone comes in and brings their bird... That was a concern of mine, that Hannah would be out flying with these birds and she might feel threatened by your birds, and she never did.
And, well, we had
and
the
they're
same,
very nice birds. Your birds are just nice.
We had the same experience with... David and Jamie came out and brought an African gray, a young African gray, made its first flights out here, and we took it from level one to level four within about a week. So to go to level five, that takes a little longer. Level four, we got some good level
four. Level five is about the flyer.
Yeah,
not
level
the
five
bird.
Is purely, well...
It's not about the bird. It's
it is,
about...
It's like the ultimate test.
Yeah.
Is the bird ready? And the at a level five, you have no recovery potential. The bird has to come back to you.
That's about Chris, not about the bird.
Yeah, okay. And that may be true, but I like to think that I can fly places where the birds are reliable. And I like to know that they're reliable. And I love taking pictures of the birds flying in these amazing places. I have a lot of fun with that.
Yes.
And I think if you were here flying with us more often, it wouldn't be long where you're going, okay, yeah, she can do that. I'm proud of my bird. She can do that. She can handle that. And it wouldn't be long you'd be flying with us at some of these level five locations. Because you can. Because you have the confidence in your bird and because you like the photos that you get out of it.
Well, the photos are nice, but somebody else has taken them. Thank you very much.
You smell like juniper berries, Gracie. Oh, it's Siren. It's not Grace. This is Siren. Hi, Siren. This is our two-year-old, or our bird that came clipped and is flying like a champ with the rest.
She's flying as well as the rest.
Very much so. All right. Well, I've actually kind of sort of wound this down a couple of times now, so... Let's go ahead and finish this up and go do some more flying.
Thank you.
All right. Come back. If you have questions or comments about something you heard during this podcast, please contact me through the Wings at Liberty website. That is www.wingsatliberty.com. Special thanks to Janet Jean-Pierre for coming all the way from the Virgin Islands. Thanks to Benjamin Smith for his help with our audio. And thanks to Susan Hilliard for her overall support. I'm Chris Spiro, and thanks for joining us.
This has been a podcast from wingsatliberty.com. This podcast was produced by Chris Spiro, all rights reserved.